With an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Lewis Jones Streisand. I hope you enjoy my 1,795-page tome. I wrote it in beige and ochre ink to match my living room. Guys, the Barbra Streisand memoir is out. I cannot believe it. It's only 75 years in the making, or however long it's been.
Lewis, when have you read that much ever?
I honestly would love to know from myself. I want to interview myself Edward R. Murrow style and ask when I've ever had the ambitions to read like this. Sincerely, I'm reading fiction for the first time in ages, The Secret History by Donna Tartt. Loving it. Really exciting.
Except, dead bitch.
Yes, quite. I am so slow at it. It totally takes me a long time to get through very clear writing. Just because I'm so used to like reading things for trivia facts that I can, you know, spit out at parties and stuff. And when it's just somebody describing a classroom for a page, I'm like, I can't do anything with this. Nobody's going to care.
So what's interesting about Donna Tartt is she went to college with Bret Easton Ellis. There's this podcast called Once Upon a Time at Bentington College, which digs into the years that she, Brett, and Jonathan Lethem sort of went to school together. And the conceit is that a lot of their novels are sort of based on, they're like Romanoclefs.
Right.
So
right.
It's piecing together what the school was like by looking at their books and stuff. But Donna, I actually have not finished The Secret History. Now that you're actually reading it, I'm going to finish it because I can't have Louis Fertel finish the book before I finish it.
That does seem very embarrassing for you, yes.
You know, doesn't it? But what's interesting about him is, I like him as an author because it's very almost Hemingway-ish too. There's not a lot of describing a building or a classroom or something. It's just this person did this and we're moving it along. That's what I sort of need in literature, or some sort of exciting prose. Because sometimes the description, I can't even describe anything that well or that long.
No, right. I mean, well, Bret Easton Ellis just has a general kind of bastardliness in his writing that's obviously addicting. So that's fun. Donna Tartt, more classically prose-oriented, I'd say. But I'm enjoying it so far. And we will get into Barbara's gigantic tome next week. I mean, like about 10 years ago or so, I interviewed her on a junket for the guilt trip. And she talked about writing it then. I mean, this is so long in the making. She's also somebody who really likes reflecting on the past, I think. Like, she has her own sort of, I think it's hard to get, I'll say, vulnerable moments out of Barbara in an interview, but she's somebody who I think has a really good memory for, like, her incredible career. I'm obviously excited to reinvestigate it. I mean, I sincerely, about Barbra Streisand, if her career only lasted from the time she made her debut on Broadway in I Can Get It For You Wholesale, which is 62, when she's, like, 19 years old, to before Funny Girl, the movie, comes out, as in before she even gets to a movie career, she would still be a Kennedy Center honoree. I mean, it's crazy that she became that legendary so fast before she even had all these other legs of her career where she became rock and roll Barbara or disco Barbara or became an incredible director. We just talked last week with Allison Williams about how there's this viral clip of her going around directing Mandy Patinkin and Yentl. Please watch that if you haven't. It's really exciting to see.
I need multiple chapters on Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers.
Yeah, right. Wait, who convinced her? I'm very interested in who convinces Barbara to do things, because she's so, what if I stayed in my Malibu home for the next 10 months and just did nothing, you know?
So she's in the Little Fockers.
Right. When
she's third in the trilogy.
Yeah.
Yes. People forget that's a trilogy.
Tolkien has not, trust me.
Ben Stiller was really gagging the girls in the 2000s.
Quite. Still it. I mean, Escape at Denimar. I mean, honestly, he's not quite can't miss, but pretty close
on camera,
to it.
Though.
Yeah,
on
right.
camera.
Totally. You
know? I don't know if he's in Escape at Denimar because I'm never watching that. But right. I do believe that it's good from people that I've heard.
What a pop culture connoisseur you are. Yes.
Have you watched Escape at Denimar?
So, no, I have not, I have to say. Yes. We love Miss Arquette.
See, the non-watching mirror has two faces, Ira and Lewis.
Oh, God. Unfortunately, that was good. One last thing that I'm looking forward to in this memoir. I just saw a CBS a Sunday morning interview with Barbara Streisand. Of course, she does one of those. And something she talks about is being extremely detail-oriented, as we all know about her. I hope she gets into the nitty-gritty about, like, some details she couldn't let go of on the set of some movie. You know, like, how in the main event with Ryan O'Neal, she was just like, I think the boxing ring should be more cerulean and less sky blue, or whatever. I want to get into her fixations on aesthetics that she cannot let go of, that seem to dictate, like, why she loves her house so much is because she's made every choice very specifically. That's why she lives in this strange mall zone. So I hope we explore that some more, too.
Oh, I mean, I hope she just talks about exploring every bit of how gorgeous Ryan O'Neal is.
I thought you were going to say Andre Agassi, but okay. Yes.
You know, I mean, that's sort of the way we were sort of celebrity, right? Because Ryan O'Neal used to be that man.
And now I would...
And now...
If I saw him on the street, guess where I'm walking? The other way.
If I saw him dying of thirst, I would let the vultures have their way with him.
Suhas.
All right.
Hope you're doing all right. Yeah.
This week, we have got a return guest. We have Danny Pellegrino coming back to the podcast to talk about his new book, his new memoir, essays, The Jolliest Bunch, Unhinged Holiday Stories.
I want to say about Danny Pellegrino, I think he's the only guest we've ever had who is like an exact Venn diagram midsection between you and I. Like, it's truly the Bravo exactly. world and then the like 90s like actress nostalgia, like both really combined.
The only thing I watch is Bravo.
Right.
Days,
no, you know nothing else. Right. You're stupid.
Actually, I have been watching some other things, and we are going to bring back our What We've Been Watching segment.
Ooh.
So we can get into the things we've been watching that we haven't really brought up on the show yet. And we're also going to discuss the 10th anniversary of an iconic piece of pop culture, and that is Lady Gaga's Art Pop.
And we will discover once and for all if people are actually nostalgic for this thing or if it just became kind of a meme that people repeated because saying the words art pop is so, like, on the nose pretentious. Like, were people just enjoying themselves or did they really enjoy the album? We'll get into that.
Well, it could mean anything.
That's what I mean. She said it herself.
All right. We will be right back with more Keep It. Shout out to the What A Day newsletter team who just hit 200,000 subscribers.
The What A Day newsletter is a go-to source for the day's latest news sent straight to your inbox every night. If you're not already subscribed, head over to crooked.com/daily.
It is the 10th anniversary of the very polarizing Lady Gaga album, Art Pop. It's an album with bangers, ballads, and R. Kelly.
Not anymore, though. I went to listen to the album on Apple Music, and that song is gone.
Absolutely. It's been replaced by the one with Xtina.
Correct. Well, actually, no, not on this version. There was simply no Do What You Want at all. And yet, also, the song with T.I. is there. Not much of an improvement, I have to say.
Well, to those of us who have Art Pop on physical media...
Correct.
I have the original record. So I gave that one a spin before we decided to talk about it a decade later, where the album seems to finally be getting its flowers. But, Lewis, what do you think about this No Skips album?
Thank you for telling me the opinion I should be having before I begin to express mine. I think this is the odd case of an album where there's no one track that I think is what I would describe as bad or offensive or something I necessarily would skip. I think it's that there are too many kinds of one song in a row, and after a while, it can feel like a barrage of noise. So I think it's an album that's hard to pick up again and again, necessarily, because... And I actually kind of had this problem with Born This Way, too. It's just a lot of production happening at you, a lot of, not that she's screaming, but she is wailing throughout the album, you know? And I think she also a lot of that. She also reuses some themes too, like on like Donatella and fashion and stuff. It's like, all right, we've kind of already done the tacky fame thing that she was obsessed with on her first two albums that had the word fame in it. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I still think Applause and Yes, Do What You Want are among her top five singles or top five songs, which I would say include Poker Face and Just Dance. And I hate when people are dismissive of those two songs. The reason Lady Gaga is a star is because of Just Dance and Poker Face. Those are unimpeachable, fabulous singles. And then also in the top five, I would put So Happy I Could Die from the Fame Monster.
Oh, okay. Well, those are three perfect songs.
Yeah.
So you, I mean, Happy in the Club with a Bottle of Red Wine.
Yes. Oh, the kind of like, that's the first song I would describe as ketamine core. You know what I'm saying?
It's also Bravo Mom core.
Yes, so. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yelling about wine.
Listen, this has bangers. When I'm talking about GUY as a single, that is a massive fucking pop song.
Yeah. I think the chorus needs an extra something. That said, the way she sings it, the video is, of course, very memorable. But again, nothing is bad about the song. It's just, it's almost in a way like she had better songs before, is all you can say. It's an album that looks worse compared to other things she's done, I think.
I don't know. I would put this up there as one of her best albums after The Fame Monster, to be honest. I think that cohesively, it tells a message. And yes, there's always the idea that she's obsessed with this fame and sort of, you know, what she's talking about in terms of how you view people, you know, how they killed Marilyn Monroe. There's actually supposed to be a song on this album called Princess Dies, which was about her and her mom's obsession with Princess Diana, too. It ended up being replaced by the R. Kelly song, which is, whoo. But that song, too, which is very weirdly about ownership of body, which is sort of crazy considering what we knew about R. Kelly then, too.
Yeah, right.
And then crazy considering she also shot a music video for that, shot by Terry Richardson. she was off her rocker at that moment, let's say. But no, Donatella to me feels less about fashion and more about the resilience of this woman who has sort of held a crumbling empire together, and her face has changed constantly, and we are looking up to her still as an icon and a star, even though she's sort of internally crumbled because of, you know, the death of her brother Gianni. And I feel like, you know, Gaga has this internal loss, etc. And fashion to me feels less about like the actual, you know, fashion exclamation point. I feel like it's really just about sort of, you know, looking good and feeling fine when you're not feeling fine.
Got it. Yes.
Not
I
hand
also
to heart. There, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, look at you.
So overdramatic.
Look at you welling up over art pop. In Donatella, she does have that very funny verse about don't puke when you're walking the runway or whatever. Mm. I mean, like, the lyrics are very... Also, like, her delivery is stone-faced on all of these songs, generally speaking, even while she's wailing. So it's almost like you're feeling she's lost humor entirely, but the lyrics are funny. It's like she's less allowing herself and the audience to see a wink, whereas on The Fame and The Fame Monster, it's like hardcore winking. You know what I mean? Just like, you know, it's very in the style of Kesha, who was popular right after that. You know, just like, we're covered in glitter, we're wearing something ridiculous, I'm falling down in the gutter, and I'm going to sleep in the gutter while dancing to pop music.
You know, what's interesting about the album to me is the fact that it was very much maligned because it was a lot of noise. It was very EDM heavy too, and I feel like people were sort of tired of that. It reminds me a lot of, we've talked about Hard Candy before with Madonna, right? Mm-hmm. It was sort of what was happening in the sphere at the time, and people were like, well, this is just a rehash. And now years later, it holds up a bit more. And Madonna has actually talked about how much she loves that album because Pharrell had her and the Neptunes had her, you know, like pushing her voice and like pushing like sonically things that she would do differently. than she ever had with any of her previous collaborators. And I feel like when you think about this album, and I think about this quote that Lady Gaga gave on it at the time of the release, how, you know, she was channeling Andy Warhol, but instead of putting pop onto the canvas, we wanted to put art onto the soup can. And I think she wanted to make the inaccessible accessible.
Right. And some of that occurs. Also, it must be said about this album, like, you know, we were talking before about how Slater or Kim Petras or maybe even Muna or something. There are all these artists right now who are making music that just sounds like what music sounds like in 2023. It's like all fits into the same soup, to use a word you just used. Art pop and Lady Gaga in general, it must be said, have never been beholden to any trends. That's sort of an interesting thing about her. Like when The Fame came out in 2008, 2009, we were not clamoring for hard pop banger things, you know, like that was pre-Teenage Dream. That's, you know, like we did have kind of like Pussycat Dolls before then, but obviously we had just gone through a giant emo period. We'd just gone through you know, it was a very Flo Rida centric era, you know, like hip hop and pop sort of melding with rap in it. So I feel like
she melded indie sleaze a bit, you know, because when you think what you just mentioned, like hip hop and pop, like that was sort of the vibe, right? But what the fuck else is, when you put it on now, what the fuck else sounds like Beautiful Dirty Rich?
No, right, exactly. That also at the time felt like a very genuine extension of the life she had been living. The same way Madonna's first album feels like, oh, she just stepped right off the floor at Danceteria and put down this record. That felt like, here I am, a kind of mouthy, sarcastic, cocaine-obsessed New York socialite-y person who's like at the club every night. And then I've turned that into The Fame, you know. So I feel like all her music stems from the life she is living and music she really wants to hear, you know. She's not like someone like, I'll say Ariana Grande, who has said, oh, I don't even like my first couple albums anymore. Like Lady Gaga never went through that period, even though I think she does have a song on the record about how she's sick of people saying they liked her when she did The Fame as opposed to her later music.
It's interesting to even think about the conversation around, like, it used to be that Gaga's pretentious, right?
Yeah.
You know, very, very haughty, putting on these airs about what it means to be a pop star and who she's presenting, but now stripped away from the being in that time and being like a decade later, like, it doesn't really feel like pretension. It feels like, thank God someone was creating a singular identity for themselves.
Yeah, right. No, it's just, that's not really on the docket necessarily anymore. You know, it feels like all music is designed to be put into the same Spotify playlist so that there's not any pangs or vibes outside this very narrow lane people want to stay in. And Lady Gaga is like still singing at the top of her lungs or throwing in references that people don't necessarily know. You know what I mean? She's not somebody who's putting out a music video and the theme is Mean Girls because everybody's heard of it. I don't mean to be shading Ariana Grande this hard. I really don't. But yeah. Sounds like I hate her. I don't. Yeah.
Are you friends with her ex-husband?
Yeah.
Is this a takedown?
Yeah, that's right. I'm lobbying for, right. Who? Yeah. Me and Pete Davidson are on the same group chat.
No one even remembers her ex-husband's name.
Right. No. She's moving on to the sponge.
But speaking of Gaga, you know, screaming at the top of her lungs, which she's currently doing in a Rolling Stones song that I've heard once and will never again. until she foisted it on us at a concert, probably. But I will, who am I kidding? That bitch doesn't like the tour. Yeah. We'll never hear it again. I will say, lastly, about this album, a lot of people try to comfort the song Dope as a throwaway as we're skipping it. But I think that also utilizes one thing Gaga really does well. When she is singing a song, a ballad, whatever, what she does with her instrument is so fucking interesting and exciting. And I just find like the way that she sings the chorus, the way she goes into the verses, comes back out of them, is so sonically interesting to me on that song. And I feel like she always tends to do that on a song. She's always giving you, she's always zigging when you think she's going to zag. And I think that that is what can make a song that would sound boring in the hands of anyone else just singing it, you know?
I also think this album maybe contains her most touching song, which is Gypsy. That to me feels like a diary entry about what it's like to be Lady Gaga. Like she's this pop adventurer going out into the world, and you can hear the debate between the thrill of being on your own and then weighing the loneliness of that too. I feel like that's something that comes through in her persona, generally speaking. Fabulous song.
It shares that thematically with my favorite Fleetwood Mac song, which is where Stevie Nicks basically covers the same ground in Gypsy.
Yes. The only thing I don't like about that song is at the beginning when she says, "So I'm back to the Velvet Underground" or whatever. And I never knew what that meant for the longest time. And it turns out the Velvet Underground is just a store where she would buy like moon pendants. And I was like, I thought it was way more enigmatic than that. You're just talking about going to a fucking store. Okay. you know when you read too far into a song and it turns out, oh, you just totally don't get the reference. It's like,
you didn't know about marketing and integration in 1982?
Yeah, right. Lewis? No kidding.
Okay, that's how you had to do it. That was payola.
No, it's as we tape this, it's Joni Mitchell's 80th birthday. And in her song California, she's singing about longing to go back to California she's on vacation in Europe, having, of course, a extremely exotic time, if you believe the lyrics of Joni Mitchell. But anyway, she says in the song, "I'll even kiss a sunset pig." And I kind of had a vision of it being like farmland California, like, "I'll even kiss a dirty pig," where I grew up in fucking the Redlands. I don't know where they might have pigs. No, a sunset pig is a cop. I did like, yeah. I'm very late in this life to understand that pig means cop. Just let
girl,
you know.
I got that I didn't know that, but as soon as you said sunset pig, I figured cop.
No, see, I was,
you didn't have to dodge the popo as a kid. Okay. Back where I come from, the streets that I was raised on.
This is so painful for me. Oh my God.
Okay. Like
you and
you
Joni,
you never know if you're going to live
you
or die.
And Joni. Yeah. She grew up in Saskatchewan and she would simply be outrunning the Rangers
baby,
or whatever they were up there.
Maybe when my sister Joni Mitchell was putting on that black face, that was her real face. Okay.
Don Juan's reckless daughter. That was Don Juan being,
that's my kinfolk. That's my skin folk.
Oh,
Go
I'm so
Blue
sorry. I have
by Joni Mitchell.
Go Blue. Ah! Now Blue Lives Matter. Now Blue Lives Matter. Help. Disease.
All right, we will.
Oh my God.
We will be right back.
We're going to euthanize this one.
We'll be right back with Danny Pellegrino. Keep It is brought to you by Kariuma. Kariumas have been our go-to sneakers for a while now because they're really comfortable, go with everything, and they're made with consciously sourced materials. Lewis, what do you think about Kariuma?
I sincerely now wear them all the time. I wear them at work, and people come up to me and say they also wear them all the time. My mom now wears them all the time. There's a maelstrom of Kariuma going on. And it's not just around me. It's happening elsewhere.
Last year, we collaborated with Kariuma to create No Step Back sneakers, and we can't believe they have now designed a second limited edition collaboration with us, the Love It or Leave It sneaker. The shoes have a colorful design with lots of Easter eggs. I mean, not Taylor Swift level Easter eggs. We're not insane. Just fun stuff like Pundit on a Surfboard. Plus, a portion of the proceeds from every pair sold is donated to VSA's Every Last Vote Fund.
Our first Kariuma collab sold out super fast, so if you want a pair for yourself or the Love It fan in your life, whoever the fuck that is, make sure to snag one now. They make the perfect gift for the holiday season with free returns. Just head to crooked.com/store. That's crooked.com/store.
You too can join Kariumania.
There it is. That's what we wanted to hear.
Your sausage McMuffin with egg didn't change. Your receipt did. The sausage McMuffin with egg extra value meal includes a hash brown and a small coffee for just $5. Only at McDonald's for a limited time.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
Most people don't realize how much of their personal information is being bought and sold every day. Data brokers are making billions, pulling details about you from public records and the internet, then packaging and selling it, usually without your consent. That's how your information lands in the hands of scammers, spammers, even stalkers. It's why you get endless robocalls and why ads seem to follow you everywhere. That's where Aura comes in. Aura actively removes your data from broker sites and keeps it off. They also instantly alert you if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura goes beyond data protection. With one app, you get a VPN, antivirus, password manager, spam call protection, dark web monitoring, and even up to $5 million in identity theft insurance. All backed by 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other companies might sell just credit monitoring or just a VPN. Aura gives you all of it, together, at the same price competitors charge for just one service. Start your free trial today at aura.com/ready. Protect yourself now at aura.com/ready.
Our guest today is exactly like his show, Iconic. He's a comedian, writer, host, New York Times bestselling author, and just overall hilarious and great. You know him from his podcast, Everything Iconic, and now he's back with his next book, The Jolliest Bunch, Unhinged Holiday Stories. Please welcome back to Keep It, Danny Pellegrino.
Hi.
Danny, it's always good to have you here.
I love you, buddy. It's so good to see you. And Louis, so good to see you. I am so grateful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, what kind of stories can we expect from a memoir about your family and Christmas, etc.? You're an Italian family. I imagine you're a spirited bunch.
Yes. I mean, it's a lot of Midwest, a lot of nostalgia, a lot of growing up in the 90s in the book, The Jolliest Bunch. And I really wanted it to feel, I sort of described my first book as like National Lampoon's Vacation. And this one's like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Or, you know, I love all those holiday movies that we watch a million times a year, like Home Alone or Christmas Story. And so I wanted the book to feel like that, where it's hopefully really, really, really funny. And then also has a little drama, a little heart, and some warmth in it as well. I keep giving this analogy, but the movie like Home Alone 1 or 2, it's got this cartoonish vibe, like really silly and funny. And then at the end, it hits you with that moment where Catherine O'Hara comes and meets her son and sees him. And it's really like beautiful moment, heartfelt moment. So that was the kind of vibe I was going for with this. So a lot of unhinged family stories, and then hopefully some stuff that is heartwarming too.
Home Alone, I want to say, by the way, is the rare case of it is 100% zany, except the trick they pulled is they cast amazing actors. So then it turns into something better than it should be, because everybody in it is like, you know, the greatest comic actress ever, or like an Academy Award winning Joe Pesci or whomever.
Right, right. I know, watching Joe Pesci in those movies try to not swear and like just, rah, 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 rah. I know he's like making animal noises or something, but it's so good.
I think that is also a plus of revisiting 90s comedies as an adult, right? You know, you're visiting Home Alone, or you're watching Adam's Family Values, and you're seeing movies that were ostensibly for kids, but they have legends in them. And when we were kids, we didn't know that. We're just seeing these very funny people, usually funny women, be very fucking funny. And a few men too. You know, John Candy is fucking
every
hysterical.
Every once in a while.
But now, you know, you watch these movies that are made for kids and they have like, I don't know who the fuck they put in them.
No.
But they're not giving you this. I feel like we were very spoiled.
Well, and you mentioned Adam's Family Values. I just watched those movies when I was traveling, and they were playing in a hotel. And the way they light Angelica Houston's face throughout those movies is so brilliant. And it's like every time she's on screen, just her eyes are lit in a very unique way just for that character. And I feel like 90s movies in general has had this zaniness or had weirdness. And now everything's so built by committee that I think a lot of these scripts, I mean, you know, I know you're a writer too, but it's like when you're developing something, so often all that zaniness is taken out because it maybe is a little tonally different than the rest of the movie, or it's doesn't fit with like what the market wants or is. And I look at any of those 90s movies, even something like First Wives Club, which is a favorite of mine, but I think of that when they're singing, and I feel like that's the kind of moment that would get taken out of a script now because it doesn't necessarily fit with they're just doing a song and dance number in the movie. And it's like, I think oftentimes those weird zany moments that we love in the 90s are getting taken out of movies, or I don't know, but I miss them. I miss the sort of craziness of those 90s things.
First Wives Club is a particular case of it's interesting what's left in, because it's kind of a longish movie and it has all these tentacles going all these directions. And you're like, I know Stockard Channing had more to do in the original version of this, or, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker, I'm sure, had another storyline or something. It's funny what ended up in the final cut of that film.
Totally.
So back to Holidays, though, I always, you know, associate you with 90s, 2000s nostalgia. You talk about it on your podcast. You had it in your first book. But what was the impetus for writing about Christmas, the holidays in general? And also, what was the first time where, like, Christmas became culture for you? Because we all know when we discovered pop culture and we were like, we love this shit. But, like, when was it where you were like, Christmas, that's for me?
Well, I've always loved Christmas. I think I came from a family where my mom in particular always wanted to have that perfect holiday for the kids. So even when I was really young and we didn't have much money, my mom still did like everything she could to bake the cookies and to do all those kind of like traditions and make it as special as possible for my two older brothers and myself. And so I always loved it. I remember the moment that my older brother, actually, he got the Mariah Carey Merry Christmas album. I guess it was 94 when it came out. But I so vividly remember him getting that album and like me stealing it. And we would listen to it. My mom and I would listen to it driving to the mall in Northeast Ohio, like over and over again. And so I think she's now known as sort of the queen of Christmas. But I can so vividly remember getting that album and just being blown away by it. But I've always loved the holidays. And when I was writing my first book, there were so many, I was loading it with these stories about growing up and family. And I noticed there were a lot of holiday stories because I think the holiday season is so filled with emotion and chaos and everybody's trying to keep it together. And obviously the more we all try to keep it together, the more those threads all fall apart. And so I noticed there were so many of these stories. And so my dream when I wrote the first book was that I would be able to then write this one. And so I saved some of the stories that I was writing for the first book in hopes that I would be able to do this. And I love David Sedaris has a holiday collection, or there's a book that the Christmas story is based on that's like a collection of holiday family stories. And so I really, that was the dream of like being able to do that, because I like picking up those books every year and rereading them. Mm-hmm. And I hoped that was the dream of like putting this out, and then hopefully throughout the years, people can pick it up and read a chapter or two, and then, or reread some thing that they like from the book. And so that was always the dream. But I always love Christmas. I've had a holiday movie podcast for 5 years now that I do with my friend Jenna, where we recap a lot of like the TV Christmas movies and these big Christmas movies. And so I don't know. I've always just loved the holiday season. I do. I'm like really basic in that way, but I fucking love the twinkle lights, the music, everything.
It must be said, you in general have a really awesome memory. I mean, the nature of your Everything Iconic podcast is you simply remembering things that we watched growing up that for some reason have fallen by the wayside for other people. I want to say I relate to you in this way. It's a gift and a curse, I feel, you know, trying to unearth all these memories again. That said, looking at like your book, there are so many stories in this. Do you have a particularly acute memory for just things that happened in your childhood? Because I imagine writing a book about like my entire life, I would be blown away at what I don't remember.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is I've always kept journals, and I've always journaled my whole life. So I have a lot of stuff with both of my books. I've been able to go back and read some stuff, and certain memories that I remembered one way, I'd go back and read entries from around that time and realize like they went a different way. Or even talking to different people who've been involved in these stories, they've been sharing information about like, oh, I remember this happened. But the funny thing about it is like some of the stories I'll be writing and I'll think this seems so crazy. And then I'll hear from somebody who is involved in the story after they read it. And they're like, oh, but you forgot this fact, or you forgot this crazy thing that happened. And so truth is always stranger than fiction. And I have also found that I just got off a tour and I was meeting a lot of people who read my first book and started to read this one. And people have their own stories too that seem so crazy. I did watch What Happens Live with Lisa Barlow from The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And she was telling me backstage, I hope I can share this, but she was telling me about a Thanksgiving where her husband like got so mad that he threw a turkey or something. And I just think everybody has those stories that really, they seem so cartoonish, but like we all have them.
That literally reminds me of one of my favorite holiday episodes of a television show ever, which was Beverly Hills 90210. And it is when Tiffany Amber Thiessen was leaving the show. Obviously, she'd been a troublemaker and she had had her feud with Jenny Garth on the show. Kelly finds out that Valerie had sort of been like abused when she was younger or something. And so she decides it's the holidays and she wants to forgive her. And like, let's not fight anymore because I found out something traumatic happened to you in your past. Whatever. Kelly was such a bitch. But anyway, she goes over to Thanksgiving and brings a turkey to Valerie. And Valerie picks up the turkey and throws it out the door.
Valerie.
And I've always loved defenestrating a turkey. That's it.
Wait, did you see that? Not to get us too off track here, but did you see that there was like a dinner? And Bethany had posted, Bethany Frankel posted this picture, and it was, and at the dinner was like the most crazy group of people I've ever seen. A lot of reality people were there, but then it was Jenny Garth and Tiffany Amber Thiessen, and they have like a, they were best friends and then had a feud, and they were in this photo together. And I'm like, I need to know what was said between the two of them. Like the headlines were all about like the grouping of reality people, but I'm like, mm-hmm. I need to know what's going on with Tiffany Amber Thiessen and Jenny Garth here.
Lewis and I know that Bethany famously loves to collect famous people.
She was on our show and I literally was like, God, are you surprised to be friends with so many celebrities? And then she, like, we didn't start the fire, went through a list of famous people. And it was just, we had to sit and clutch the table as she wrapped the names of everybody she knew.
Well, I'm sure we could all trauma bond about interviewing certain people.
Oh, my God. Let's get that on the Patreon. Do we have one of those yet? Well, we'll sell that episode. As we said before, you obviously have an encyclopedic knowledge of the pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. And I feel like when you're one of these people, you get caught up in like YouTube holes of old stuff that you find yourself revisiting or maybe watching for the first time if you're underfamiliar with certain pockets of pop culture history. What have you been maybe obsessed with recently that's new to you?
Oh, gosh. Well, maybe not new to me, but I do keep speaking the gospel of the Rosie O'Donnell YouTube channel because she uploads.
Didn't they remove shit recently?
They put it back.
Okay. Oh, great update. Thank you. Okay.
Yes, they put it back. So we're all safe now. She's still uploading the full episodes there. I also fall in these rabbit holes of old commercials. So I am a huge fan of like the YouTube channels that they'll post like a full 90s commercials or a commercial block. Or you can, if you're interested in the holiday commercials, you could just type in like holiday commercials from the 90s. And I find them soothing, relaxing. And that's kind of like my relaxing time is to like watch old Nerf commercials or something, which sounds crazy. But yeah, I love that. Or in general, talk shows too. I'm just a huge talk show junkie from the 90s. So aside from Rosie, I love watching old clips of Regis and Kathy Lee or old Regis and Kelly. This is going to make me sound really dark, but I recently saw like footage. This is going to make me sound crazy, but footage from like 9/11 that day and like how talk shows handled it. You know, I found it very fascinating to see how the talk shows who were on air, they were handling this thing. I mean, there's a clip of Regis and Kelly from that day that is, it's an interesting sort of pocket of history that I had recently gotten to a YouTube rabbit hole on.
Let's be glad Wendy wasn't on air that day.
Oh my God. I do miss Wendy so much.
I miss her so much, but that would have been, so the planes crashed today. Anyway, Tom Cruise.
Clap if you care.
I love the commercial thing mostly because this is sort of like a lost thing now. I mean, except for Hulu, because I have Hulu with TV. And when I want to watch Housewives the night that it airs, I'm forced to watch the commercials. But commercials kind of suck on streaming now because you always get the same ones over and over again. One of the things I love the most when I used to VHS record a TV show because I was at theater or something, at rehearsal or some other thing, when I would get home and rewatch it. And then when you'd rewatch like an episode of Buffy years later, you would see the commercials happening like during the commercial break, and that is so fun to me because you're seeing just sort of like this snapshot, not just commercials that people have randomly collected, but like the commercials that people were actually watching at that moment. I rewatched the show Glory Days, which was on the WB recently on YouTube. It was a Kevin Williamson TV show. Eddie Cahill. Yeah, it was like one season. It was very stupid, but it was the girl from Revenge.
Emily Van Camp.
Emily Van Camp. Yeah, she was in it in a small role, and that sort of then led her to bigger stuff. But I was rewatching just like the pilot of Glory Days on YouTube, and the old commercials were in there, and it was fun being thrust back into 2003, seeing like, even remember the slogan, Make Seven Up Yours?
Right.
Yeah.
It was Make Seven Up Yours, but then in the early 2000s, they were like, Make Seven Up Yours, because people started saying up yours as an insult to people. That is a thing that was completely gone from my brain until I rewatched that commercial.
It's a snapshot of the time, and you can go back and see like what products were popular, what brands were popular. Even there, I got in a hole recently where I was seeing all the .com, like it was all the .com ads, and it's like, we don't really get those anymore, but it was incredible to see at a certain point in time, every ad was a .com, like pet.com and whatever. So that's incredible. And also YouTube is great. There are like performances, musical performances, particularly like holiday ones that I remember seeing as a teen, and I didn't know if I'd ever see them again. And now you can go and watch the 2002 tree lighting from Rockefeller Center and see, I don't know, Ashley Tisdale doing like a promiscuous version of Last Christmas. That's amazing.
No, there was a point once upon a time where we never thought we would see these things again. Like to this day, I have this vision of Luciano Pavarotti and Vanessa Williams on SNL doing some sort of holiday performance. I'm like, that can't be real. But then, of course, it is. And you can revisit that. I want to say about commercials specifically, I think for me, those were the most important sort of conduit to get into the holiday season. Because one thing you looked forward to, even if you weren't buying anything, was going to a store and seeing everything set up for the holidays. And commercials got you sort of amped for that. So in a way, like, that puts me in the spirit more than any episode of a TV show does, which feels a little bit more like, well, they have to do a holiday episode, you know? Just like the commercials really set the tone for me.
The Hershey's Kiss commercial is one of the most flawless ads of all time. Like, they've been able to reuse it for decades now. And every time I see it, I get in the holiday spirit. It's very simple, just the Hershey Kiss Jingle Bell ad. It's so brilliant. It's like the Tootsie Pop commercial that aired for 60 years of how many licks or...
The one, a two, a three. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Or Campbell's Soup has one that airs, I think, still to this day, where like the boy is eating soup and is a snowman and then it melts.
I mean, listen, it's not Christmas to me until I see Santa Claus and the M&Ms seeing each other and going, they do exist. He does exist.
Yes. I actually had the voiceover artist, Billy, I can't think of his last name at the moment, but I interviewed him. He did the voice of like Doug for Doug. And he's done
Billy
these
West.
Incredible voice.
Yes,
Billy West. Incredible. Bugs Bunny and Space Jam. And I was so fascinated by that M&M commercial. So I was talking to him about it on the show, and I feel like I was probably the only one that cared, but I was like so fascinated that he recorded this M&M commercial so many years ago, a couple lines, and then it airs every single year and it airs a lot too. Like I don't even watch commercial TV. I watch stuff on streaming, but even I feel like I see that ad every year still. And how incredible to do something like that that's timeless and is just like an M&M commercial.
How do we one day celebrate these voice actors who have done like 750 roles? Like the woman who plays, she does a bunch of Simpsons roles, but she plays Angelica's mom on Rugrats, Tress MacNeille. That person has done literally a voice in almost any show you've ever seen. And we've not had what's the Kennedy Center honors for that person? We need something specific to recognize that these people are in our ears every year without exception.
Yeah, and they're incredible. And I look at some of the stuff now and I wish, I know that networks and stuff, they want the big celebrity voices for the animated projects. And I think sometimes
I don't want to hear.
Bring back voice actors. Well,
Yeah. Because they're so talented at what they do. And I just wish, like, let's let them do it. I know there's financial reasons and all that kind of stuff, but it's like, someone like Billy West or Tess or, I mean, there's so many of these voice actors who have created these incredible voices. And now sometimes I watch things and I'm like, it's not memorable because it just feels like a celebrity doing their voice. And let's give us something.
This shark is Issa Rae.
Yeah.
And I can tell, you know?
And speaking of shark, I do blame Shark Tale for that whole thing. Because do you remember that movie came out so many years ago? And that was like the first time I remember where it was like, they were just shouting like Angelina Jolie, Will Smith. And it's like, okay, well, I don't need them to be playing sharks in this. Like, what's... Yeah.
I will say the only good thing to really come out of Shark Tale is
Car Wash.
Well, yes, Car Wash. Christina Aguilera, Missy, iconic historic song. Is it streaming? It needs to be streaming. It's a perfect song. But Martin Scorsese plays Sykes in that film. And I'm like, Scorsese should do more voice acting. He's kind of great on his daughter's TikTok. So
hire him. Hire him for the next voiceover role.
Help struggling VO artist.
Billy West and Martin Scorsese. That's who we need. Fox needs to get on the line.
Thank you so much for being here again. And congrats on your book. The cover is so cute, and I have to imagine, like, shooting a cover for a book, too, is maybe you didn't know really what to do for your first one, because it's just essays, and you're just like, well, I'm posing, and they'll pick something, but I feel like for this one, there's the Christmas tree, there's a ladder, there's the lights around you, like, it gave you something to do.
Right. Yeah, it was based on, we found, like, a Norman Rock, the person who shot it was Stephen Buskin, he's an old friend of mine, we went to college, but found this image. It was like a Norman Rockwell painting. And so we really went to recreate it and do our version of it. So luckily we had sort of a template. And then, the first book I shot the cover like at the very early stages of COVID. Like we couldn't have any hair and makeup people. It was like just me and the photographer. I was at my lowest. What's that tweet about Christina Aguilera?
Fat, nasty,
like
and broke. Fat, yes, right.
Uh-huh. Career in shambles.
That's how I felt.
You came on that book cover mad as hell.
I got those photos back and I was like, these are all shit. And then, of course, they wanted like one of those traditional like comedian memoirs where it's like a stool and whatever. Yeah, and so this one was way more fun.
Yeah, you know.
I know.
I was doing various wild poses with a finger up and shrugging, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so Pat. It was much, much easier to be in front of like a Christmas tree and know what you're doing.
Great.
But anyway, I hope people get the book. Please go buy it. There's an audiobook. I hate to beg your listeners to buy the Jolly Sponge, but buy it and you'll have a good time. Please. Got to move the merch.
We need people to buy the book.
We need to buy stop talking about it. If you like this podcast, we just gave you 40 minutes of entertainment. So go please support us by spending $25 on the book. I know it's expensive, but we got to keep the lights on here. And while you're at it, you can support all of us in any way you can. It'd be great. Even if you don't read it, just put it on your coffee table or something.
Right. It looks cute. Yeah.
Yeah. Please put it by the tree. Give it as a gift. Anyway, I love you guys.
For a limited time, you can get a Big Mac meal for just $8. That's a burger, fries, and a drink. They don't call it an extra value meal for nothing. Get a Big Mac meal only at McDonald's.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
Most people don't realize how much of their personal information is being bought and sold every day. Data brokers are making billions, pulling details about you from public records and the internet, then packaging and selling it, usually without your consent. That's how your information lands in the hands of scammers, spammers, and even stalkers. It's why you get endless robocalls and why ads seem to follow you everywhere. That's where Aura comes in. Aura actively removes your data from broker sites and keeps it off. They also instantly alert you if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura goes beyond data protection. With one app, you get a VPN, antivirus, password manager, spam call protection, dark web monitoring, and even up to $5 million in identity theft insurance, all backed by 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other companies might just sell credit monitoring or just a VPN. Aura gives you all of it, together, at the same price competitors charge for just one service. Start your free trial today at aura.com/ready. Protect yourself now at aura.com/ready.
For a limited time, you can get a Big Mac meal for just $8. That's a burger, fries, and a drink. They don't call it an extra value meal for nothing. Get a Big Mac meal only at McDonald's.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
All right, it's that time again. Lewis, obviously, there's plenty of things that we talk about on the show, and then there's things that we don't get to because you can't talk about fucking everything.
Right.
But
it's tough.
What have you been watching that we haven't been able to talk about on the show yet?
Okay. I finally just glimpsed at Fellow Travelers, which has
horny as hell.
Quite. Oh my God. Gay sex. Did you know what it looks like? It's in broad daylight now.
It's giving OnlyFans.
Yeah, Jesus okay. Christ. Please let me pay the $9.99. It's so fucking much. But it stars Matt Bomer and Jonathan Bailey as two guys having a romance during the Lavender Scare in the 1950s. And it also flashes forward to his life married to Allison Williams in the 80s. And so you're getting a lot of This Is Us, Rick Baker style makeup. You know what I mean? When they would put our girl Mandy in, I think, 14 hours of makeup every day so that she could look like, you know, basically Jane Curtin.
Thank God she's free.
Yeah.
Okay.
This Is Us.
She's got
enough.
The checks.
Yeah.
She got the checks and now she's free to raise her kids.
And they are adorable.
They're so cute.
But anyway, I am craving this kind of series because we're always talking about how we want to see gay romances that aren't like culminating in, and did you know AIDS happened? Or did you know that they both have internalized homophobia? Not that you're not getting that in this show, but this is a very Carol looking TV show. You know, you're getting the spick and span Mad Men gloss of the 1950s and the kind of sinisterness that we associate with that too.
And some spy elements.
Yeah.
You know, not too heavy. It's not giving the Americans, although I would fucking gag for these two in a gay version of the Americans. Because first of all, Matt Bomer in White Collar was great. And Jonathan Bailey is basically already giving you Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys in the Americans in this. Because, girl, this wig he's wearing.
Yeah.
Is that his hair? It's giving wig.
Yeah, I have a theory of everything about that wig, and it's not a good one.
The wig and the glasses, I'm just like, baby, you're ready to go poison some Russians.
Yeah, right. No kidding. I'm excited for this show because Matt Bomer, I think, is perfect for this show, and not just because he is the spitting image of the Don Draper type you expect to see on the show, but also you rarely get into, I don't know, the depths of Matt Bomer. He's good at having that kind of concealing what is going on in his head thing. And I think we haven't, I mean, I'm not a White Collar super fan as you are, but I'm excited to see what he does with a role that's this fraught.
Yeah, and also, I mean, not to be all sentimental or anything, but you can't help but feel sort of like proud of him in this.
Because totally,
he's good.
Right?
He's good. And I remember, you know, the era where, did you ever expect to see Matt Bomer in things? He came out and it was, okay, we're never going to see that faggot again.
Right, right, right. And we enjoyed him, of course, in things like The Boys in the Band and stuff. But to get finally to this point,
yeah. I think he's like one of the hardest working actors just currently in Hollywood right now. And it's really nice to see him in continued roles that are play to his strengths. And showing that he's just a really fucking great actor.
Also enjoying the dynamic between him and Allison Williams. We obviously couldn't talk about the project last week because we're SAG members and we don't want to end up in jail or whatever.
Because the studios want to use every dead person's likeness now. Yeah. That's currently where we're at in the SAG strike, by the way. But yeah, he is great. Allison Williams is great in it. There's a lot of great supporting characters in it too. I loved the scene in the speakeasy.
Yes. Also, again, just visually stunning to look at. Almost maybe the flaw of the show is it seems like they spent maybe a little bit too much money on keeping everything so shiny to the point where you're almost jarred at how nostalgic looking the show is meant to be. But by the way, speaking of the 1950s and homosexual repression or whatever, I was just reacquainted with a story I had totally forgotten about. Did you remember that Rooney Mara, or sorry, I think it's Rooney Mara actually, we say that incorrectly as a culture, refused repeatedly to be a part of Taylor Swift's squad because she's just a private person or something? That story was thrown in my feed recently. I have never believed a rumor more. Can't you just picture her being like, God help me, please get this blonde woman away from me. It's so right. Apparently Taylor was obsessed with her after seeing her in Carol or something, which is maybe one of the cooler things about Taylor Swift. That I concur with.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure the Gaylors are excited about that. You know what a Gaylor is?
I am, well, they're Yeah, they're mentally ill people, right? What's going on there?
Well, obviously. They're, you know, 13 flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Yes.
But they're the queer fan base of Taylor that has theories about her relationships with women, particularly like Karlie Kloss and these people. So I'm sure there's a lot. I'm sure the message boards are heating up.
Right. And they're sitting there in their adult, you know, Disney costumes typing away. Yeah.
Okay. Portrait of a message board on fire right now. So they are the fanfic about Rooney Mara right now. Can I also say that, speaking of Taylor, did you notice that the Israel Twitter account, which is maybe the most psycho Twitter account outside of Joyce Carol Oates.
Right. There is a race there. Yeah.
That gives you sort of an idea into at Israel just tweeting things at people. Tweeting at Taylor about how there's been a missing Israeli girl, which is, you know, very sad since the October 7th Hamas massacre, who was a Swiftie. And they're making bracelets, and that Taylor should post about it. Psychotic.
Yeah.
Why are you tweeting at a U.S. pop star right now when you should be doing other things? But also extra crazy because at Israel, the actual account was busy doxing and threatening and harassing Taylor's actual friend, Gigi Hadid, and her whole family literally weeks ago.
I mean, the internet, ladies and gentlemen, here's where we are right now. This is as grim as it can possibly get in terms of celebrity land.
But to bring it back to the squad, do you remember that Selena Gomez last week in maybe her 10th time this year said that she was going to take a break from social media?
She's like your anti-Facebook, being like, this time the break is for real. You won't see me. I'm going back into I'm making my pies. Get away from me.
Because people asked her to speak out. And if you recall, she also got mad when people asked her to speak out about Black Lives Matter in 2020. And she was like, well, a post isn't going to do anything. And this time she was like, I'm going to stop posting, whatever. To bring this back to the squad, Taylor was just recently on Sunday seen having dinner at Bond Street with Selena Gomez and Gigi. And let me tell you what happened on Monday. Selena Gomez signed that ceasefire letter. So, you know, Gigi came into this dinner and she was like, girl, let's have a chat.
and Taylor sat there with arms folded like Marlon Brando in The Godfather and turned around in her swivel chair and back. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. She was like, I'm not in it, but you need to sign it, Selena. They expect you to, Selena. So twirl that wand. Get to writing.
Taylor just got another number one album with the Taylor's version of 1989, by the way. Did we not talk about that before? I guess we should say something about that. There aren't too many versions on this.
I'm tired.
I know. It's just not like there's nothing about the 1989 album that I feel like really gains from being remade. It's like already electronic sounding anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can recreate it and she still sounds like that. Like her voice still sounds like that.
The Jack Antonoff songs sound fucking stellar. Mm-hmm. The recreations of the Max Martin stuff.
Yeah. By the way, Max Martin, have we said this? This man is only 52 years old. He's been around for like 100 years, like remixing, doing like Robin and old Britney and stuff. Well, he's like a wunderkind. Again, for the third time this episode, I'll say it. Kennedy Center honors when? Come on now.
For Max Martin? Absolutely. Please. Let's.
That's a medley I'll see. That's a medley I'll watch. That's a problem they have at the Kennedy Center honors. You know, like you give an award to Meryl Streep. It's like, what are we going to fucking watch? Like a Silkwood recreation? Okay, I would watch that, but not everybody would.
A live Ricky and the Flash performance.
Girl, I will be there. Please. I'll play Sebastian Stan. Yeah.
You know what? The last thing I will say about Taylor is I'm always bringing up one of my favorite restaurants in New York, Holiday Bar, which Selena used to go to all the time while she was filming Only Murders, and they have a drink there called the Selena Tini. How am I at that restaurant all the fucking time? And the one fucking Thursday I'm not there, Taylor and the squad go in.
What?
Just chilling
roll
with
up?
The Heim sisters.
Oh. How did he get away with that?
This is giving the 1989 rollout is really, I love how for each era, she sort of revisits that era. because he's dating Travis Kelce, a big celebrity right now.
Right.
And also, New York right now is anytime I step out, there's a chance I could run into the squad.
Wow, oh, wow. She's welcoming herself to New York again. Welcome back to New York.
She's at dinners at like every fucking night. So, yeah.
Jason versus Taylor in the streets of Manhattan. Let's do it. Yes.
Let's get Kelly rolling up in that mix too.
Yeah. Right. Oh my God.
As she sees Taylor Swift, what kind of lesbian walks around in a tattered cardigan?
Bring me back Attitudinal Kelly Rowland. What's that song she had where she was like really like dancing up on somebody? What is that called? Not discipline.
Motivation.
I couldn't think of it. Yes. That's right. Yeah.
I mean, she used to release a whole bop every year. Where is she?
Right. No, excuse me. Mm-hmm. On the red carpet of like the VH1 some sort of honors or something. Oh, no. It was the revamp of Divas Live in which they had people like Natasha Bedingfield. I'm sorry. That's not a diva. I'm sorry. You guys missed. But Kelly Rowland was there. And I said something. I was like, oh, my God, the dancing in the motivation video. I was just like, you really? Or I was like, oh, yeah, in the Lose My Breath video where you jump on that guy. And she goes, well, let me tell you something. There's nothing wrong with jumping on a guy. I was like, the slut jumped out.
Ally.
The slut jumped out.
Yes. Ally.
Yeah.
I want to say lastly, because we started talking about the fucking squad.
Yeah, oops. Yeah.
Another fucking show I'm really enjoying right now, and this won't surprise you, is Gen V.
Oh, right.
Which is the spinoff of The Boys.
The Boys is
The Boys is fucking great. It's rare that a show is seemingly geared towards bros and men, right, who love the internet, but then it subverts what they're going to get. It's one of those things where they'll love The Boys and then it's, wait, this is political. What are you talking about? Nazis are evil. Like when Stormfront was a villain in season 2, and it's like, yeah, one thing about those tables, they turn.
I think that's your favorite meme. That's your number one favorite meme, I think.
Maybe. That and Whitney.
Yeah, right. You know what? We need a Whitney meme renaissance. I haven't seen much of her lately on Twitter. And by the way, you know there's a plenty we still haven't unearthed. I need people to start going through the AMAs. I need people to start going through like Merv Griffin show clips and finding more Whitney stuff.
But Gen V is sort of the college version of The Boys, where there's a school called Godolkin University, which is just called God U for short, but these superhero college students go there. And the idea is that the 10th highest ranked have the potential to become superheroes where they're fighting crime, or they could be in the 7, the superhero group from The Boys. But most of them are just using their powers to show products and sell merch, et cetera. Like that's right. What their future is going to be, or they're going to be on TV shows and stuff. And so it's interesting because it's doing a lot of the same ideas about commercialization and that The Boys gets into, and sort of the glorification of war and shit like that. But it's doing it from a perspective of like, you know, Gen Z kids, you know, that's why I call it Generation V. And, I think it's really fun. It's really fun, and it feels like a fresh take on The Boys. And The Boys was obviously based on the Garth Ennis comic. And this, I believe, is something fresh that was cooked up by the producers. And I think it's a really good show. I think this is one of the best sort of things that Seth Rogen has been producing. You know, I didn't love Pam and Tommy, but The Boys and Gen V are really good. And I'm only halfway through the season so far, but I'm excited to watch more of that too. That and Fellow Travelers are really sort of scripted shows I'm enjoying right now, that and The Morning Show. It's nice to be back in the scripted because I feel like I took a break for a minute.
I will try to get more TV in, but we are ramping up for Oscars season. And I'm like, I just booked the Color Purple screening. We still have to talk about Saltburn yet. We are not clear on when or why we can talk about Saltburn, but that will be an interesting conversation once that finally happens too. So much to look forward to this holiday season.
I've seen Saltburn. I've seen Poor Things.
Not seen Poor Things. Excuse me. How has every fucking faggot seen Poor Things?
That is the fucking movie of the year.
I'm Lewis. Me. Lewis. I'll see these people on Twitter who have not heard a fucking movie in their fucking life. They don't know what The Favorite is. They don't know. Yorgos Lanthimos. They ain't spelling that. I'm over here not seeing the film.
The way that I want to give Emma the Oscar again, she's so fucking good.
She does kind of feel like a 2 Oscars winner person. Yeah.
Except Lily Gladstone is submitting for Best Actress, not supporting.
As she should. The problem with that role is the last hour of the movie. It's not that she disappears, but she's not really giving acting the way like an Academy Award winner gives acting. Like if you see the movie, you'll see. But it does feel like she's still the front runner. Also, Annette Bening and Nyad, I think it's going to be a powerful movie that people connect with. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. She really dropped out of the last bit of the film, but I feel like coming out of it, she's the thing that people are talking about the most and what is driving the conversation around the film. So I think that might help too. But we always know what happens when we get into awards season, seeing what drops out, what comes back up, etc. So it'll be fun.
No, it's always interesting to realize what drops out of a conversation that seemed like a sure thing at first. And I have to tell you, after all these years, I cannot predict it. It always is very strange to me. And then, but then in retrospect, always feels kind of inevitable too. So we'll, of course, get into that as it occurs.
Yeah, but Poor Things right now for me is my only close to 5 stars film of the year. Near perfect for me.
Oof. Okay, got me excited.
All right, when we're back, keep it. And we are back for our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Lewis, what is yours?
This is a half Keep It because I'm still excited for this thing, but now there's an asterisk on it. So as you know, Kylie Minogue, her residency just opened in Las Vegas. We've never brought up this person on the podcast before. This is her debut right here. Kylie Minogue, welcome to Keep It. I'm seeing her in this.
You know what, Lewis? Huh? You did not mention Madonna once last week.
It's never been done. You know I'm experimental over here. I love trying new things. You brought her up this week. It wasn't even me. So anyway, Kylie's going to Vegas soon. I'll be seeing her in December. Very excited about it, except for the fact that, one, I'm obviously avoiding the set list. Please don't show me the set list. Don't tweet at me the set list, whatever. I'm sort of weirded out to realize that the show starring Kylie itself is actually only 75 minutes long, and she comes on at 11 p.m. after a long sort of burlesque circus type show. Now, okay, I get it. It's Las Vegas. You want to see some spectacle. Tassels are a part of the whole thing. You know, people like riding through a hula hoop is something you have to watch if you're in Las Vegas. But at the same time, if I'm paying to see a Kylie Minogue show and Kylie Minogue's only doing 75 minutes, I don't think she was square with us from the jump. And I'm realizing now, and by the way, this is something I became hip to because I was getting my hair cut last week and the guy, Damien, who cuts my hair, was saying, did you know that the star of the Kylie Minogue show she's doing is actually interchangeable and Christina Aguilera will be doing the exact same show replacing Kylie Minogue? And apparently there's rumors about who will be doing next. But the point of the show is, it's a standalone show that they then insert a star into and let them do their songs and sort of choreograph the pre-existing choreography sort of wraps around these artists. So anyway, that's not the same thing as, you know, here's Adele with all her fucking songs. You know, there's like something kind of strange going on here. And as my friend Jan pointed out, when he was buying the tickets for this show, it says the star of the show is not guaranteed to be there.
What?
I was weirded out myself. No, he's like a pop music detective. He always finds out things like this. So just to let you know, something kind of interesting is going on here.
So she was going to cancel. She might cancel.
That's a reference to a song from Kiss Me Once.
Wow, she's scamming.
I guess. I mean, like, it would kind of be a scam alone if she were only performing for 75 minutes. But then this other... Also, you know what? I just do not need to see Cirque du Soleil shit ever again in my life. I just don't need to see somebody in like a onesie wrapping around silks and then they're in the air and I have to worry that they're going to fall because we've all seen those Flying Walenda videos where the person fucking dies. I'm sorry. I just don't want to see that again.
It's giving We Got Pink at Home.
Yeah. this sounds like Pink is waiting to do it. That sounds like who belongs here. Yes.
Do you know how I know who the Flying Walendas are?
I feel like some 70s cartoon is about to come into play.
So, thanks to the old writers on Days of Our Lives, sometimes there's a random phrase or occurrence that will always pop up on the show, like over the years. Like when someone is, someone will always tell someone that they're like crowing about something,
yeah,
or they love using the phrase "Welcome to my parlor," said the spider to the fly. Having a character say that.
It's like when you watch a Woody Allen movie and every third person says the word terrific. Who are these people?
Yeah. Yes. But there was a long period on the show where random characters were saying, "I don't give a flying Walinda about what she wants."
That's giving like Batman cartoon series type. Holy Walinda
for the word fuck.
Yeah.
Is hilarious to me.
A flying Walinda. Wow. That is very cute. Anyway, Kylie Minogue, obviously thrilled to see your show. I will be screaming alongside, I think, gays from every part of the galaxy. I do think everybody's flying in for the show. I'm going to meet a lot of people from like Croatia or something at this show. I'm almost certain.
It's gay global guts.
Yeah. Oh my God. And she is the glowing piece of the aggro crag we're all clawing for.
Back to you, Mo.
More quirk? Come on, keep it. Where you been? You still refereeing things?
Let's get all the Nickelodeon divas on. Where's Linda Ellerbe?
Yeah. Miss Summer Sanders, I'm ready. Ira, what is your keep it this week?
Now my keep it is BravoCon related.
Okay.
But it is about a debate that has been occurring online. So Agent Queen Jeff Lewis, I think you know of him from the real estate shows that were on Bravo.
Yes, flipping out.
So he was on a panel with Andy Cohen at BravoCon where he referred to the season premiere of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And he made a dig at one of the cast members, Crystal Minkoff. You might know Crystal Minkoff's husband, Rob Minkoff, who directed The Lion King, the original.
Got it.
So he talked about the fact that she wasn't really in that episode. There was a lot of ground to cover, but he said, "I think Crystal had about 1 minute of screen time in the episode, and it's the best episode Crystal's ever been in."
Okay. A little rude.
To which she responded on the carpet at BravoCon with, "Yes, I texted him and he apologized for it, but I said, it's fine. He's just a cocksucker."
You never hear cocksucker anymore, aside from Tiffany Pollard. We got to get into that. Yeah.
And then she said, you know, his problem is he really wants to be a housewife, but he'll never be one.
Of course. I think that's just true, right?
Yes.
He certainly acted the part of one on that show.
So now you can imagine that this led to discourse from people writing things like, "To those defending Crystal's pejorative use of a homophobic slur that's commonly used violently, I'm sure Matthew Shepard heard that slur several times in his final moments.
Is that what he heard?
To normalize its use as an insult by straight people is deplorable. First of all, cocksucker is a hilarious insult.
Yes.
Two, no one hate criming you is going to call you a cocksucker while they are beating the life out of your body. Because let me tell you something. Cocksucker does not roll off the tongue like faggot."
Yeah, right.
It's two
That's
syllables.
That's why we invented that word. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Clicker. Cocksucker is, there's art to that word. It's three syllables. That is why you hear it. That cocksucker is 90s mob movie.
I was going to say it's
lingo.
Mafiosos okay? talking to each other. Yes. I'm not saying it's like okay. pro-gay language or anything, but I am saying like, lay off. Also, it's like, you don't need to fucking bring up Matthew Shepard to validate your fucking argument. It's like tacky as hell.
And even if you weren't bringing him up, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to be offended by that word or by a cis woman saying it. It's ludicrous. It's an insult. It's a funny insult. It's not really one that I feel attacked by.
I would also just say, watching her say it, it seems like she has gay friends, and it's just like something you would say, like, "Oh, that cocksucker." You know what I mean? Like the way we would say that faggot or whatever. Yeah.
Bring it back.
Right. Well, I mean, it was sort of brought back in that Tiffany Pollard clip where she's on House of Villains and she's looking at Omarosa, and I guess Joel McHale gives her a moment to say something, and she says, "Excuse me, Omarosa, you're a," what are the exact words? "You're a cocksucking, cum guzzling Republican cunt." Now, let me say something. The woman is very funny. And the way she just says it, stone faced to Omarosa, who is speechless, for once, thank God. For that alone, Tiffany Pollard deserves the Nobel Prize. I will say,
and I'm happier And I sleep better knowing you're not in the White House.
Okay, but that's where I believe she flopped. Because nobody was losing sleep because Omarosa was in the White House. In fact, she should have made fun of that, the fact that Omarosa had a desk in the White House so that Trump could, what, pretended he knew a black woman. The fact that she did that makes her the patsy of all time. I wasn't worried she wasn't going to, like, sign bills into law or whatever.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, yeah, up is down over there.
Actually, she has a bunch of government secrets in her apartment.
Okay, yeah, right. And her Mar-a-Lago should be raided sometime soon. But yeah, I felt like she almost had an A-plus moment, but it started as an A-plus, then wandered into B-minus.
And I will say, now I'm wandering away from caring about House of Villains, because New York was voted out in that episode. So why am I still watching?
I call this Miss Vanjie syndrome. You know, you have the person right. do the interesting thing and then they go immediately. And now it's like, wait, what are we doing? I was all excited for that.
I don't need to watch Johnny Bananas on another competition show. I'm sorry.
When you say the word Johnny Bananas, I am immediately fatigued. I just, like, I have to sink into the couch. Johnny Bananas still out here being bananas.
I'm going Johnny Bananas.
Oh, my favorite, yeah, Dick Tracy soundtrack, yeah, B-side.
All right, this was an episode.
Yeah, wow.
Thank you, too.
I learned a lot, and hopefully I'll forget a lot.
Thank you to our fans, who I hope you still give a flying Walinda about us after this week. Thank you to Danny Pellegrino for being here, and we will see you next week with more Keep It, and Friday, I have another bonus Keep It Real episode with Danny joining me again to recap what happened at BravoCon. And then I interview the Countess Luann herself.
Oh, my God. I'll tune in and tremble. I'm trembling already.
You know we did a duet.
Oh, God.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. And our associate producer is Malcolm Whitfield. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III and Louis Vertel.
This episode was recorded and mixed by Evan Sutton. Thank you to our digital team, Megan Patzel and Rachel Gajewski, and to Matt DeGroot and David Tolles for production support every week.
And as always, Keep It is recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I'm Nate Silver.
I'm Galen Druk.
And I'm Claire Malone.
We're back, this time with our friends at Crooked Media for a new show called
Still Counting.
Yeah.
Numbers are hard, takes are easy.
And frankly, numbers have only gotten harder.
What does the data actually say? How do we reconcile that with the other things that we're seeing in American politics and around the world? And how do we use that data to understand or maybe even dare to predict the future of American politics?
New episodes every Wednesday starting September 9th. Subscribe to Still Counting on youtube.com/@stillcountingpodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.